Good morning. It is Wednesday, February the 20th, 2019, and this is your friend Dan in Little Saigon neighborhood of Seattle. And before I go into the core topic of this podcast, I'm going to read from the Bible, John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. Give me a second because I'm getting old, so I got to take off my glasses when I do this. They went each to his own house, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law of Moses commanded us to stone such women, so what do you say?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus stood up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." Now, I am sorry that reading came off a little rough. I probably should have practiced it a couple times. But as you may or may not know, this podcast is all natural and very improvisational. So I often don't practice things before I discuss them, and I rarely, if ever, write them down. I just sort of discuss an issue. So the question that might come to mind is, why, Dan? Why John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11? Why the story of Jesus and the stoning of the woman? Or rather, the stoning that never happened. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is that adultery, from what I understand in the context of the Bible, can mean a few different things. But fundamentally, it means sexual relations outside of marriage. Adultery can be committed by single people, according to the ancient text. So if you're single and unmarried and you're having sex, that could be classified as adultery. And if you live in the United States in 2019, the battle against that kind of adultery, I think, is long lost for many. I, for one, will admit I haven't had a lot of sex in my life, but that's not for lack of desire. It's just never happened. I don't think that I want to go out and just have sex with anyone, but I truly don't know, in terms of the question of right or wrong, if the greatest sin is to have sex outside of marriage, or if it is a huge sin. If you understand the history of human civilization, and if you understand for much of it, everyday people were slaves and serfs, well, then marriage wasn't really an option for a lot of people. For many people in the position of slavery, marriage doesn't even apply. Marriage was very much a legal matter amongst people who had resources. So as one of those people that likely can trace his name back to peasants, I do often look at this question of adultery from a different angle. I do think it relates to committed relationships, fundamentally, and secondarily to treating sex as if it's something that's not important. Sex is important. But in America, like I said, 2019, sex is a commodity, and it's trivialized and it's made irrelevant. And it's one of these things where people just assume humans are incapable of making moral choices. It's why the media and our culture will lampoon things like people who say, I'm going to commit to not having sex until I get married. Well, you can make fun of that, but the reality is a lot of people don't have sex until they get married. A lot of people simply are extremely lonely. And if you put it out there that everybody's having sex, then you're also sending another kind of message. If you're not having sex, you're some kind of piece of shit. Which, again, I don't care. I frankly consider it to be a very sketchy thing, this desire to simply go out and have sex, simply because you're opening yourself up to all sorts of things, not the least of which people who can take advantage of you. That's the nature of relationships, the nature of love. That's as much as I want to say about adultery. But the main point Jesus is making is about sin. You know, it's easy for us to go around, especially Christians, judging people, which we really shouldn't do. I mean, we should be interested in discipleship and self-discipline and really spreading a message of love and acceptance and peace. And I don't mean acceptance of sin, but acceptance of human beings, acceptance of others. You know, Jesus did not, in my opinion, revel in sin, although there are people who will read the New Testament and say Jesus loved the sinner. And I think that that's true. I mean, Jesus does love the sinner. I'm a sinner, and I believe that Jesus loves me. But that doesn't mean Jesus loves the sin. You'll notice that the chapter ends with, you know, hey, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, lady, it looks like all the people judging you are gone. And she acknowledges this, and he says, go forth and sin no more. It wasn't, you know, hey, lady, it looks like you got away with it. Now you can go sin some more. That's not the message. The message of Jesus is, yeah, you screwed up. You probably made a mistake. You're a sinner like everybody else. But now you have an opportunity to try again. The act of judging in this context is a very permanent act. Stoning someone to death is, you know, it's capital punishment, it's finality. And so, you know, if I'm pausing a bit here and there, I also had an incident this morning. I was walking to the store and I tripped very embarrassingly. I didn't really injure myself seriously other than my ego, but I'm a little banged up and I'm drinking coffee. So if I pause a little here and there, please excuse me for that. You know, cut me some slack, right? Don't stone me to death. This particular verse is one I've known about since I was a kid. I mean, when you go to church, and I went to Catholic church as a kid, this one shows up often for good reason, I think, but it's not often deeply understood, especially amongst those who feel a need to go around judging others. And this is a particularly important biblical chapter for me, because I often sin through judgment. Now, in fairness, I probably judge myself worse than I judge others, but that doesn't make any difference. That just means I'm sinning twice. That just means that in my process of acting like judge, jury, and executioner, if only intellectually on others, I'm also doing the same to myself. And I don't think Christ, you know, our Lord in heaven, likes either situation. I think Christ would probably prefer I cut myself more slack. And I don't know, it's a tough one. But in the process, to just not judge others too bad, you know, I am clearly not a fan of the government, if you listen to my podcasts. I mean, I don't care. Well, I mean, I really don't care where you're coming from, but you might be like me. You might be kind of a bit skeptical of the government in general, and you may not be exactly like me. You may not be an anarchist, but you might be a libertarian or some sort of a small government person. And so you too agree the government is filled with evil people, evil plans, and I think that's basically true. But the government is filled with people, and it's not likely, even now, that every single employee of the government is evil. That's probably false. as I've talked about recently, you know, I've known people, I know people who work for the government, and some of those people I've met are kind of shitty people, but some of them are not. They're actually decent people, and you're left with the realization, if you accept this, that you can't simply stereotype and say every single person that works for the government is a terrible person. I interact with someone on my podcast that works for the government, and this person seems like a pretty decent human being. Now, I don't know this person that well yet, and it's possible that if I got to know this person better, you know, that I would discover some evil machinations, some plans, some skeletons in the closet. It's always possible as you get to know people, you discover darkness. Believe me, I've been down that road a few times in the last few years. I know that the first meeting is not always the final meeting or the exit, and it does take time to get to know people. But this particular person seems pretty cool, and this particular person works for the government. I also know from my Bible, though I'm no biblical scholar, so please cut me some slack, I know from my Bible that Christ, you know, was okay with people who are tax collectors. I hate the IRS. I really do. I hate the income tax. I think the income tax is terrible bullshit. You know, it's not just that it's destructive to your privacy and your liberty, but it's actually, if you're going to collect taxes, and as an anarchist, I don't believe in that bullshit, but if you're going to collect taxes, it's about the shittiest way you can do it. It definitely punishes the poor and the middle class, and it definitely helps those who are in positions of power. It is filled with all types of exceptions. You know, that Ways and Means Committee, you should research the Ways and Means Committee, but that Ways and Means Committee within, I think, the House of Representatives does a great job of making sure all their pals get their tax exemptions. But for ordinary schmucks like me, we're going to pay the full tax, and then once a year, we'll beg to our master to get a little back. So yeah, I hate the tax system. But does that imply that I should hate the tax collector? You know, that's one of those questions I think about. In 2015, in Indianapolis, I was driving home from work, and it was rush hour on, I think, I-465. And here's the thing about 465. 465 is this kind of loop that goes around Indianapolis. And at 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, even though the speed limit is 55, people are driving 70, 80, dangerously, in every single lane. So if you drive the speed limit on 465 in Indianapolis during rush hour in the slow lane, okay? For those of you who don't know what the slow lane is, it's the lane furthest to the right, you fuck. And when I use the F-bomb, and I think the Lord in heaven knows this, I don't always mean something negative directed towards you. It might even be a term of endearment, but please understand it's part of who I am. I'm working on it, but I do swear. But yeah, the slow lane is the farthest lane to the right. So I'm getting onto the 465, and traffic is going about 70, 75, even though the speed limit is 55. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, and lo and behold, I get one of these, you know, modern Interceptor Camaro, you know, Indiana State Police, State Patrol vehicles tracking me with the lights on, and so I pull over. And the police officer, State Patrolman, trooper, gets out of his car, comes up to my Camaro, comes from his Camaro to my Camry, and, you know, asked for my proof of insurance and my license. And he says, do you know how fast you were going? I said, yeah, I was probably going about 70. And then he said, well, you do know the speed limit's 55. And I said, sir, all these cars, they're going faster. If I go slower, it's more dangerous. So the police officer says, well, you were going too fast. Here you go. He hands me a piece of paper. It was a printout, like he had a printer in his Camaro.
and he prints out, and it was like a bill. It wasn't even a ticket. You know, back in the day, the police officer had to, you know, do a little bit of work filling out some boxes, and they would hand you a ticket. Well, no. This was actually a bill. And it said, and he told me, listen, if you pay, you know, more money, because it is, it gave you an option to pay more money and you don't contest it, in 6 months, it will be off of your record, okay? So here's the thing. He basically told me that if I pay him more money, which is true, according to the Indiana regulations or whatever, if you paid more money, since I didn't have another ticket, within 6 months, it magically goes away. Oh, and they get to make another $100 or whatever on that particular bill. And it was a bill. And I go about my business, and the Indiana State Patrol officer goes about his. Now, here's the thing. At the time, it really pissed me off. Not just because what he was promoting was essentially dangerous driving. Me going 55 onto 465 near the fucking airport after work was actually kind of fucking dangerous, okay? You got lots and lots of trucks and vehicles going down the highway at 70 in every single fucking lane. And his advice was, go 20 miles slower than traffic, veer into it. You know, even though people are crazy and nutty, it's okay because you're supposed to go 55. So for several months after this, and I even bought a domain name and I recorded a bunch of videos for my YouTube channel about this. For several months, I went the speed limit in the slow zone, which means I legally obeyed the law according to this fucking cop. And you would be amazed how many people nearly ran me off the road. I'm not talking about the fast lane, you fucks. I'm not talking about the left lane. I was driving down the road one day in the slow lane, going the speed limit, according to Officer, you know, Meinzinger. I think that's what his name was. I was going in the slow lane, this at the speed limit. And there was plenty of space to my left. There were actually three empty lanes. A motorcycle comes up behind me. Now, does the motorcycle go into the fast lanes that are completely open? No. The motorcycle tailgates me about 5 feet fucking away from my bumper and then passes me on the shoulder. Yeah, I'll repeat that. The fucking motorcycle driver decides to take the shoulder, like, you know, it's as if I was in Korea. You know, when I was stationed in Korea, I was told many things about driving on Korean roads, but one of them was is that there really is no shoulder. The shoulder becomes a lane, and that's true, or at least it was true then. So, yeah, I obeyed the law for several months just to prove a fucking point. In fact, to this day, I will still only go about 5 miles over in the slow lanes. And I will tell you why. It's because I enjoy at times living dangerously. And if you really want to live dangerously, don't drive 150, you know, in your Maserati. I mean, you can do that, and that might be dangerous, but it's not nearly as much fun. Go on to I-5, like in Seattle, or go on to another highway someplace else in the country. Go in the slow lane and drive the fucking speed limit. Hell, drive 5 miles over the speed limit. Hit your cruise control button and keep it right there. And I promise you, you will encounter some of the worst features of humanity. You will encounter angry, angry, angry people on their way to some personal doom and they cannot wait to get there. And even though they could easily pass you, they want to force you off the road for fucking obeying the law. Now, I tell you this story because at the time, like I said, this particular fucking cop really pissed me off. It was like, I wasn't made of money. Sure, I could pay the bill, but I wasn't made of money. It's not like I was rich. And I was convinced afterwards the cop must have had some way of checking your credit score. Because here's the thing. A cop like that is not going to pull over somebody if the computer says this person is likely, you know, an illegal alien and doesn't have insurance. That just creates work, paperwork for the cop. And the cop in the fancy interceptor with the onboard credit check is not going to pull over the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. I'm sorry, but the guy driving the Maserati going 110 in general doesn't get pulled over. So sorry that you don't realize there is no rule of law in many places. But my credit score probably came back at the time, it's no longer true, but it probably came back at the time in the 700s, and it says, okay, this guy pays his fucking bills, and he's speeding. Wow, this is a perfect opportunity to make a little bit of money. And for those of you who think that, well, Dan, that's not fair, that's not what was happening, I'm going to tell you something. I think that's exactly what is happening with these, you know, $80,000, $120,000 cop interceptors they buy now. It's not just the car that's fancy. They got a lot of fancy computer equipment, including a little printer that produces bills. So they pull you over and they're ready to go. Here's your bill. Here's your bill for speeding. We know you're going to pay, you fuck. Now, in hindsight, looking back at this from the perspective of what Jesus is telling us, I probably should simply forgive the cop and say, listen, you know, he wasn't really doing his job, in my opinion. He probably was obeying authorities who are not on the straight and narrow. But he is just a human being with a job. I mean, that's the thing. He might be a human being doing something that's kind of shitty, but it isn't the shittiest thing in the world. And you kind of have to say to yourself, you know, do I have a right to judge or should I try to forgive? In that particular moment, I was not in a place of forgiveness. I was in a place of personal wrath. I did not want to say to myself, well, gee, that person, you know, maybe they'll go forth and they'll sin no more, but I need to just accept it. No, I was in a place of not wanting to turn the other cheek and really just wanting to be angry about it. So it does put things in perspective. You know, when Jesus says, listen, it is true according to the laws of Moses, it's true according to Leviticus or Deuteronomy or any number of the first books, that this woman is a sinner. This woman committed adultery. And if you want to substitute woman for man, you can. I know that people will get the impression that things can be sexist in the Bible, but really it's not about gender, or I should say, not about sex in this case, or sexuality. It is about the action of sin. And I think that, you know, Jesus does not want us to sin, and Jesus admonishes sin, and I too try to rebuke sin in my life, but I'm a sinner. And when I judge others, I sin. My sin gets even worse. I'm not just simply sinning against others. I'm sinning against myself. If I am trying to be a true judge, I am attacking my own soul while I'm attacking others. Now, I can't promise you that tomorrow or today I will instantly stop judging, because there are things that make me angry. I do feel sometimes that I live in a world that's ruled by evil, and that is a harsh judgment. But it does kind of make you think, you know, you might hate the war. You might hate the war, but does that mean you should hate the soldier? You might hate the gallows, but does that mean you should hate the executioner? I know, that's a tough one. If the executioner's job is to pull the lever, you might hate the gallows, but should you hate the executioner? You might hate getting that ticket, whether it's a parking ticket or traffic ticket, but does that mean you should hate the traffic cop or the parking enforcement officer? And with respect to the IRS, listen, it's possible you're just like me. You might hate the taxes, but does that mean you should hate the tax collector? I don't have all the answers. I don't. I know that with respect to judging others, which is really reserved for God, It's tough as a Christian to accept this, because so many Christians are fed, you know, a lie that Christianity is about being judgmental, but it really, really isn't. In many ways, Christianity is about acceptance, accepting yourself for being a sinner, and accepting the fact that you live in a world of imperfect people, and imperfect people commit sin. It's not easy to accept that. And also to realize that this is not an excuse to sin. Just because you're a sinner and just because others are as well does not imply, well, I sin and others sin, ergo, we should just all go around sinning. Now, that's not the point, okay? We're not trying to reimagine the crude internal philosophy of Rasputin as an actual, you know, kind of Christianity. It's not. Sinning is not the way to God. Sinning, however, is a feature of human existence. We're not perfect. Whereas God might be perfect, God is perfect, I am not perfect. I can really try hard to not judge others. I can really try hard to not harshly judge myself. But it's not easy. I hold grudges. I hold grudges against people I am convinced deserve it. Because in some cases, in at least one case, and if I say the phrase the goat king, there are those who understand what I'm referring to. With respect to the goat king, I am kind of convinced I encountered evil. And I don't mean a person doing evil. I mean essentially a representative of evil on earth. And in the case of evil, I believe that there are examples in the Bible, including the New Testament, where Jesus specifically does not have a lot of tolerance for pure evil. Jesus doesn't have tolerance for demons. Jesus doesn't say, well, the demon sins, but we're all sinners. No, 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 no. Jesus casts out demons. Jesus rebukes demons. So when it comes to demons, and I do believe they exist, and I do believe they walk amongst us, that's how crazy I am. When it comes to demons, I don't think it's turn the other cheek and understand and you know, there but for the grace of God and don't throw the first stone. When it comes to demons, you have to rebuke them. You have to cast them aside. You cannot say to yourself, there is a Christianity for demons. There really, really isn't. But when it comes to human beings who have souls and they do commit sin, you do have to learn to accept. Now, of course, you could say, well, Dan, what about Ted Bundy? Or what about Pol Pot? What about Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or George Soros or any number of bankers within the banking system, like in 2008, who more or less fucked their neighbor and then got a giant reward for fucking their neighbor? And that's a nice way of putting it, you know, the great financial crisis. It is a story. There are many aspects to the story of the great financial crisis, but one aspect is this, that some of the most disgusting, most disreputable, worst people that ever fucking lived and continue to live well today on fancy yachts were basically rewarded for being historical scumbags, for basically forcing people out of homes, for creating economic havoc so bad that tens of thousands of people committed suicide. And I'm sorry, that's probably what happened in a lot of cases. Either fast suicide or slow motion suicide. You know, and when I say slow motion suicide, I mean things like alcoholism. And even, yeah, ultimately drug use. So when people say things, you know, like when someone says to themselves, I need to love, you know, hate the sin but love the sinner, it can be difficult, because when it comes to people like that, I have to say, I don't know. I know it's not my position to judge, but also that doesn't mean you accept evil. And I do believe there are people that are so beyond just ordinary sin that the only word that applies is evil. So this is the tough part. This is the challenge. You know, this is the part where it's hard to tell the difference between, you know, I don't know if it's the wheat and the tares or the wheat and the chaff, but it can be hard to tell the difference between those people that can be saved and those that have essentially sold themselves to the devil. And I don't have an easy way to say, how do you tell the difference? I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I had an answer to that question. I am convinced there are some unambiguous examples. I think when I look at Hillary Clinton, for example, I'm not looking at a human being. I'm looking at someone that has given themselves to the devil. And in that case, yeah, it's not so much about judgment as much as it's about do not touch the unclean thing, do not associate yourself with demonic forces. So in the case of Hillary Clinton, I don't see a lot of forgiveness from my perspective. I don't see a means by which that's going to happen. But when it comes to that state trooper back in 2015 that pulled me over, I probably should have just accepted what happened and just, you know, said a prayer, and I should have forgiven. That is what I should have done. And to this day, and at this moment, I should say, I forgive you. It's okay that you gave me a bill for doing something that essentially was safer than driving onto the highway 20 miles below the speed of traffic flow, okay? I chose to do something that was safer. You chose to pull me over. You gave me a bill. That bothers me, but I need to learn to hate the tax and not the tax collector. It's hard. Like I said, if you listen to my podcast, you know, it can sound like a kind of psychedelic fire and brimstone. It really can, because sometimes I get really angry. It's one of those things I have in common with my dad. I never thought I'd have to say that or admit it, but it's true. And anger doesn't always take an obvious form. Sometimes anger and judgment are just deep inside the soul. But like I said, whether it's deep inside your soul or, you know, going into the streets with a stone and getting ready to stone some woman because maybe she had sex outside of marriage. Well, yeah, that's a sin. But is it the worst sin in the world? No. And is it a sin from which someone cannot recover? No. You can recover from that sin. You know, murder is a quote-unquote, you know, mortal sin. It's a sin that one would say there is no recovery from. But even when it comes to murder, I think in some cases, people can find redemption. Now, the road of redemption for murder, my guess, is a very, very, very long road, probably very treacherous, probably very dangerous, probably a road that most never make it down. And so murder might be one of those sins for which redemption is almost impossible. But even for murder, in theory, according to Christ, there might be a path to redemption. But I also have to say, and this is where I have to meditate on this, but I do believe there are demonic forces in the world. It sounds crazy. If you listen to me and I'm saying this, you said, Dan, that's delusional. In fact, that's the word that gets applied. It's as if you can open up the DSM-4 or 5 and find some psychological category, and it says, hey, people who believe demons exist, you know, make sure you prescribe Prozac or Xanax or lithium or chlorpromazine or Thorazine. This person believes in demons. They're crazy. That is the secular way of looking at this issue. And even in that case, it is my obligation as a Christian to love the sinner and hate the sin. And it is difficult. And I think I'll leave this podcast in the following context with the following kind of thought. When you think of pure evil or demons, you really shouldn't think in terms of sin. You know, sin isn't simply a feature of free will. Sin is a feature of having a soul. You know, people who are capable of sin are also capable of guilt. I think a demon can commit an act. A demon can commit a horrible act. But it's hard to call that anything other than evil, because in the case of the demon, there is no soul. There is no conscience. There is no guilt. The demon never says to his or herself, fuck, I wish I hadn't have done that. I don't think somebody like Ted Bundy ever said to himself, I wish I had never harmed those women. I doubt that moment ever fucking happened. So calling that sin is part of, I think, the human error. It's not really sin, it's pure evil. And pure evil's not something you can make a treaty with or forgive or find balance with. Pure evil should simply be rebuked. I'm not telling you to go out on some weird campaign to find demons and kill them. If you believe that's what I'm saying, you're missing the fucking point. What I am saying is that when it comes to judgment, I think it is appropriate to recognize that there's evil in the world. And with respect to evil, forgiveness is a meaningless concept. You cannot forgive something incapable of understanding the meaning of forgiveness. You cannot attribute sin to something incapable of feeling guilt. If you encounter a sociopath or a psychopath, and that's a secular term, demons better, but if you encounter a psychopath or a sociopath, and this person's incapable of feeling guilt or understanding of others, then you're not really encountering a sinner as much as you're encountering evil. And in those cases, the notion of forgiveness is also irrelevant. You cannot forgive a demon. A, the demon doesn't give a fuck, and B, God does not care. Okay? God does not want you forgiving demons. God would like you to rebuke them. God would like you to avoid them. But God does not have any interest in you forgiving demons, and the demons don't give a fuck either. So, yeah, you got to be careful about judgment. And when it comes to human beings, aka sinners, you have to avoid judgment and try to find a place of love and understanding. It's not about accepting the sin, but it is about trying to help the sinner, like yourself, live in a world with less sin, maybe no sin. I mean, ultimately, that's the goal, to be without sin, if you can in your own life. But to judge others, to judge other sinners, is a sin. You know, the message of Christ in this particular passage about those without sin throw the first stone, it's very related to that common discussion of living in glass houses. You know, I live in a glass house. I spent most of my life as an atheist. I don't know where atheism ranks in terms of sin, but, you know, claiming there is no God and then speaking to others that there is no God, well, essentially what you've done for however many years you've done it is spread an anti-Bible, an anti-word, and I truly don't know. I mean, if I told you that I know for certain that I'm saved, I'd be a liar. And again, this returns that issue of judging myself. If you wonder sometimes, if you ever do wonder sometimes, if I judge others too harshly, believe me, as harshly as I judge the world, I judge myself 5 times harder, and that too is a sin. So on this Wednesday morning, as you're working or not working, looking for work like I am, consider the possibility that figuring out other people's, not other humans, it's not so easy. Accepting people for who they are can be very difficult. Accepting yourself as a sinner can be almost impossible sometimes, but you have to do it. And while you work on avoiding sin, and you should, always remember that you're imperfect and at times you will make mistakes. You will. The best strategy is to learn from those mistakes and try to do better. And I hope you all have a great day.